Welcome to How Do You Write? I'm your host, Rachel Herron. On this podcast, I talk to authors about how they write, what their process is, and how their lives fit together. I'll keep each episode short so you can get back to writing. Well, hello, writers. Welcome to episode number 357 of How Do You Write? I'm Rachel Herron. Super thrilled that you are here with me today as I get to bring you a special bonus episode brought to you by my patrons at the $5 a month and up level. I cannot tell you how helpful it is to me to have the $1, the $5, the $10 patrons. Every little bit allows me to do this kind of thing, to sit at this desk, to write the Patreon essays. I'm about to send one out about my dog. And if you want to read an essay about a dog who I am completely in love with, you could see that essay for just $1. Or you could pledge $5 a month and get all of the past things, plus be a person to whom I am a mini coach, which means you can ask me any question and I answer them, which I am about to do on this episode. First of all, though, I would like to apologize for not being around last week. I fell down a hill. We have a hill in our backyard and it's been raining and it's very slippery. And I thought to myself, be careful, self, on this slippery concrete. And then I stepped off the concrete onto the grass, which turned into mud, and my foot went out from under me and I landed on the concrete on my booty. And I tell you what, I have not been able to sit down. I was not able to sit down for 3 full days. I was also not able to stand up because that hurt too much. So I spent 3 days in bed fuming and watching TikTok and the bruise growing, and I'm okay, but it was annoying. So, but I'm really glad I didn't hit my head or break a hand or any of those other things. So now I am back to it, back at the desk, and I am super excited to answer these questions, which have been piling up. So thank you for all of your patience as I get into this. All right, let's start off with this question from Holly Bowen. Hello, Holly. She says, I hope you're having a lovely Monday with your new puppy. It feels creepy to write that as though I know you, but I'm a longtime listener of your podcast, and I really love your content. Thank you for saying that, Holly. And it's not creepy to receive. It's lovely to receive. And I'm glad you reached out. Going on. I know you say email is one of your biggest time sucks, so I will keep this super quick. And I'm looking forward to getting the famed auto reply, which I hope you enjoyed. In one of your recent podcasts, you mentioned your Clifton strengths and how you know what activities give you energy and which activities drain it. I was wondering if you could do a mini episode with some more information on how you figured that all out. I would love to hear more about it and maybe some more info on how your strengths work for you and how you've set up your best process to work best with them. And I know, Holly, you're a fan of me talking with Sasha Black and mentioned that maybe Sasha and I would talk about this. However, Sasha and I go too far into the weeds and we are not certified Clifton Strengths people. So we're really not supposed to talk about that stuff. I'm going to do it anyway today, but Sasha and I are uncontrollable if we were to be asked this question. So I'm just going to answer it to the best of my abilities while I am sitting right here with you. And I'm going to bring up my Clifton Strengths real quick. Even though I know my top 12 by heart. We're not going to go into all of them, but what Clifton Strengths is it's from Gallup as of the poll people, and they have spent many, many dozens of years talking to millions of people who are good at what they do. They talk to the best in their field, astronauts and physicists and janitors and cooks and everyone who is really, really good at what they do. They built this test out of talking to those people. There's a list of 34 strengths that everyone has, and some of your strengths you're stronger in, some of the strengths you're weaker in. Those things don't tend to change much over time. So therefore, this is Rachel's analysis of this. Don't come after me, Clifton Strengths. But what I do and what I learned, probably, Becca, don't come after me, from Becca Syme. Becca, S-Y-M-E. If you are not familiar with her, just Google Becca Syme and go to Strengths for Writers. I recommend that everyone who is a writer take the Clifton Strengths test through Becca Syme's website, because then she gets the data on writers and then she gets to coach the writers. And she has so much information about writers. If you are just wanting to check out who she has a series of great books. And also she was on the show, Google, How Do You Write Rachel Herron and Becca Syme. That'll pop right up. It was a fantastic episode. But what they talk about is those bottom 10 strengths of those 34, you ain't never going to be good at those. So quit trying. Like, discipline is so highly touted in this world as something you must have in order to be driven and successful and productive. My discipline is at number 25. When I saw that, I understood, oh, right, I have always been terrible at discipline. And I don't have to feel bad about it anymore. I don't have to work to make it better. I can ignore it. And I can look at my top 10 strengths, particularly, and use those to harness everything I need. Because those top 10 strengths, if I put a little bit of work into each one of them, they grow exponentially in power. Those bottom 10 strengths, they suck. I don't ever have to worry about them. The middle ones you can work on if you want to, but I'll just run this down really briefly for me. I'm number one, input. Number two, intellection. Number three, achiever. Number four, positivity. I'm only doing the top 10. Number five, strategic. Number six, relator. Number seven, activator. Number eight, connectedness. Number nine, competition. And number 10, futuristic. All of those put together, because I have been studying these things, I know how to kind of harness them. And I would recommend joining Becca Syme's Patreon, even if you don't have the money right now to take one of her courses, which you should save up for because they're that good. Join her Patreon. You get so much information. And you can also look at all of the videos. She's done a video talking about each of these strengths as it pertains to writers specifically. So in her back catalog of the Quitcast on YouTube, you can find her and other people talking about each one of these strengths. So what I would recommend you do is get your Clifton Strengths done. And then this came from, I think it was Marcella Carbo was talking about this. Marcella, if that was you, I think, I'm pretty sure it was, but talking about feeding each one. And what I did a long time ago is I sat down with my top 10 strengths, and using a combination of those videos from Becca and reading about these strengths, I decided what would feed each one of my top strengths. And it's funny because on a daily basis, I wanted to feed each one of these top 10 strengths every day. And I discovered that on a daily basis, I was feeding two through 10. But number one, input, my number one strength, input, I was starving and I could feel it. Input is basically the strength that wants to consume all of the information about every single thing. Input is also about cataloging, sorting, storing, and especially giving away. So basically you take all this information in and then you collate it and then you give it away again. This is why I have a podcast, but I want to take in all the info. And on days where I'm feeling really busy, when I have to be doing all the production stuff, I am pushing out, and I don't have time to take in. And to me, I must read every day for at least an hour. It's usually about 2 hours. I must look at some social media of some sort. It has to be the kind that doesn't kill my soul. But that is input to me. I am learning. I am growing. I'm going down rabbit holes. A high input person loves a rabbit hole. So I need to feed that every single day. My intellection is number two, which means I take longer to think when I'm writing or about anything than other people with lower intellection. It just means we're slow processors. And that means that I have to build in thinking time. When I realized that I needed to feed all of these strengths, I brought back morning pages into my routine. They add an extra 20 to 30 minutes of my day, which is not trivial, but that is my thinking, my processing. If I don't get that time on the page thinking, then I do it at 2 a.m. when I wake up. So I'm making sure that each of these strengths get a little bit of food every day. And that keeps me happy and productive and moving forward. So I would recommend doing this. The best way, I think, is going through Becca Syme and her website. The cheapest way would be paying for your 34 strengths and then kind of DIYing it by looking at her videos, joining her Patreon, or just studying the strengths by yourself. But the way Becca Syme has geared this to writers, she understands how writers work and how to make them write better, faster. So that's what I would say. And it's very cool. So I hope that that helped to hear. Thank you, Holly. Okay. This one comes from Dharma Kelleher. Hello, Dharma. Okay. Dharma says, hi, Rachel. Just got done listening to the latest mini coaching episode and I could use some mini coaching of my own. Here's my dealio. As you may know, I do know, I've published about a dozen crime thrillers all wide, and I am the most prolifically openly trans author in the genre. That said, the idea fairy, which sounds much nicer than the shiny object syndrome. Oh, I love that. Popped an idea in my head for a steamy sapphic vampire romance. Actually, I lovingly blame Sasha Black for the idea that won't get out of my head. So on a whim, I started drafting what I expect to be the first of many sapphic paranormal romance novels. And I decided to write under the name pen name Kaylee Cara, a play on the original Irish pronunciation of my last name. Ooh, lovely. Where I run into trouble is deciding if I want to go exclusively with KU, as 90% of paranormal romance titles are in KU, or if I should stay wide, or if I should do the first 6 months in KU, then move it wide. There's another question in here. I'll tackle this one first. I'm not good at saying shoulds or shouldn'ts, but I will say it has been an interesting experiment for me to take the Cypress Hollow novels into KU, which I've always been wide. I've never been in KU. So this is the first time. I'll just give you my experience. They did kind of well when they first went in, and then Ed, my wonder assistant, somehow got me a BookBub on a KU book for the first book in the series, which just hit last week, and it's still selling really well. Or I guess it's getting a lot of page reads, a lot more page reads than I usually get. So it's doing well right now. I expect that to taper off. My gut reaction was, if I were where you are, I might try the first 3 to 6 months in KU, because you only really have to sign up for 90 days. And we are looking for brand new books. We would love it if they make a splash quickly, right? So if it makes a splash in 30 or 60 days, great. If it does really well in KU, fantastic. And if it doesn't, then pull it and go wide and treat it as a new release for everyone else. I'm literally talking out my very painful ass right now from falling down the hill. When I say that the way I'm thinking about it is, if I were you, and this is not advice because I'm just spitballing it, but I might not even tell my main list when it first comes out, you know. Experiment with just seeing if KU can give you traction. And then if you move it out of KU, or when you move it out of KU, then treat it like a big blast. Like, here it is, world. If you're going to be telling your Dharma fans about it, which I'm not sure if you would or not. Amazon is the devil. And sometimes we dance with the devil. Sometimes we play his games to see what happens. And I am not against playing with and trying out those kind of things. I don't think anyone will penalize you for trying out being in KU, which is, for those listening who don't know what that is just a Kindle subscription program where you pay $9.99 a month, I think, to read all of the KU books for free as a reader. And as a writer, you get paid a very small amount per page read, but those can add up sometimes. Okay, to your second question. The other issue I'm struggling with is the fact that I want to write cisgender rather than trans characters in these PNR paranormal romance novels because of one of the reasons I'm writing this new genre is to make a little money. With all the books I have published, I'm not even breaking even after expenses, barely 4 figures annual gross sales. As important as it is for me to represent my trans community in writing, which I will continuing to do with my ongoing crime thrillers, am I selling out by writing strictly cis characters in my steamy sapphic paranormal romance? Thank you. You are not selling out. I feel very strongly about this, and you're not selling out. You're choosing to use your skills, which you have been given and have honed and developed in learning your craft and the business. You're using those to make some more money. You are still representing the queer community. And even if you weren't, you would still be putting into the world books that are beautiful and show your values as a human being. I love the work that you are doing with your crime novels, with your trans characters. And you get to do what you want in other places too. You get to kind of do that experiment like we were just talking about with KU. You are experimenting. And hey, if a sapphic novel breaks out and you're in a series and the third or fourth or fifth book, you decide to make a trans character even more prominent, won't that be fun? Won't that be exciting and fulfilling? But you are representing the queer community and doing something that might make you a little bit more money, which this is something I've been thinking about a lot. With more money, we are able to help more people. And I know that sounds silly and a little bit too easy, but when I make more money, I am able to target donations to places that can help a lot more than I can by walking down a city sidewalk, you know? So keep that in mind too. You are trans and you are also a woman and you are also a person who dresses really well. And you are also a person who likes dogs or cats or all of these things. You get to write what you want to write. And you are not selling out. You're using your talent to give your core story, which remains the same, no matter who the characters are. Your core story is always going to be the same. And it's the core story that only you can tell. And you'll be telling it through sapphic characters. Great. I don't think you're selling out at all. And I hope you don't mind, but my gut feeling on this was so strong. And that I just wanted to like kind of a double check, which sometimes I do with my partner. And I went to Lala and I said, here's a question for you without context. And I told her your question and I said, is she selling out? And Lala's answer was, no, she has a talent and she's choosing to use it to make money in a way that will help her in her life. That's not selling out. She's a musician, so she understands these kind of conversations. And hell yeah. And also, I'm really excited to see where these books go. So keep me posted, please, Dharma. And I hope that was helpful. All right, couple more questions here. Tuomas says, hello, Tuomas. At what point in an indie author's career is it reasonable or worthwhile to hire a virtual assistant? Oh, such a good question. I think it is worthwhile. Reasonable, that's your mileage may vary. Some people come into writing with gobs of money and they don't need to write to make money. Therefore, it may be reasonable for them to get a VA as soon as they start writing their first book. But in terms for me, for whom that is not true, it was worthwhile for me to hire a VA when Ed lost his job and I asked him to help me out with some side tasks because Ed was already a friend of mine who was constantly telling me what I should be doing to be better with my marketing and all of this stuff. And he still is. And I still listen to I listen to 100% of it, but I get off my butt and act on it at about 10% of it. But at that point I was able to afford to hire him. And oh, the light just got very bright in my office. If you're watching on the YouTube, sorry, if you just got blasted out by sunshine. And for me, that was the right timing because there was a bunch of stuff I hated doing that I wasn't going to do, like tracking sales, like putting in for BookBubs, for doing some things that are really good for me as an author. Uploading, formatting, all of the things I did not enjoy doing. Ed is so, so, so good at. And so it really did allow me this breathing room to decide what I do love to do, what I do want to do. And I was able to do it. But I do also believe that in the beginning, if it is an expense that is worrying, I think that all of us who are self-publishing and also in trad pub, I think we could argue for this too, but we want to know how to do everything. That's probably not true for everybody, but I want to know how to do everything. And then I will find out, sometimes surprisingly, that I love something that I thought I would hate, and then I hate something that I thought I would love. And when I can reach out and get help for those kinds of things that I hate doing, that are a time suck or an energy and emotional suck for me, that is where I turn to VAs. And Ed and I have outsourced some things that, you know, he doesn't want to do, that we hire somebody else to do because that's not in his skill set or it's not worth his time to do. So it's always a, you know, Ed doesn't do everything for me. He does the things that work for him. And I love it. There are some things like, we're house poor, we're tightening the belts. We just don't have a lot of expendable income right now. However, there are two things. There's housekeeping. We have a housekeeper that comes twice a month. And that has been true for about 10 years when I realized it was so much cheaper than couples counseling, because it would either have gone to divorce or housekeeper. So no matter what, I make sure that there's money for the housekeeper, for Ed, and nowadays for doggy daycare, because that's also saving us sometimes. But those things are like, I will not have a latte. We will not eat out, but those are the things that will continue to be paid for, because to me, they are that important that I have that support. So if there's support that you are looking into to do the things that you don't enjoy doing, or that is taking a lot of time away from your writing and revising, and you can afford to do it, great. If you cannot afford to do it, this is never a thing that you should put on credit, because we can do all these things ourselves. I'm speaking to everyone, to almost not just to you, but like, don't put ourselves in debt for these kinds of things. That's a bad idea. Learning to do it yourself, great. Hiring help when you can afford it, great. When you know what it is you want the help with. And it's not just, can you help me sell more books? We have to figure out how we want to sell more books, and then we can have someone help us. Unless you get an Ed who comes to me with things like, you could make more money if you do this. And, you know, God bless. Ed is on episode, I think number 100 or 200. He's either in 100 or 200. So if you want to hear me and him talking, it's great fun. He's the best. So 12 months, let me know what you decide on that. Okay. Thank you so much. All right. Last questions come from Linda. Thank you, Linda, who says, as I think about and talk about my memoir with a few close friends and begin to revise a few things that are happening that I hope you can address. Number one, I'm beginning to have doubts about my book theme, my ideas for it, my skills. Is it normal to go through the doubting phases? Yes. Yes, Linda. I think the further we get into our books, the further we revise them, the closer we get to pushing them off our desk, whether that means sending query letters out to agents if we want to be traditionally published, or moving towards hiring an editor if we're going to be self-published, the closer we get to pushing our books off our desk, the less we believe in them. And if you can just remember that, remember my voice saying that as anyone listening to this gets closer and closer to that point in their writing career where a book is going to have to leave their desk, we lose trust. We lose faith. We lose faith in the themes. We lose faith in our ability. That is normal. That happens to absolutely every writer, except for like one or two, and we don't like them because they are not fun. They are so self-confident. And honestly, I've never met one, but I'm sure somebody's out there. So just remember my voice saying that. We lose our faith more and more, the better and better the book is getting, honestly. Absolutely normal. We ignore it. We get comfortable with that discomfort, and we keep moving forward. Number two, am I writing my book for me versus readers? I think the best person to write our books for is to ourselves. We are writing the book we would like to find on the shelf. There will naturally be a readership for that book if we have written it to please ourselves. Period. I try not to think about readers at all until I'm about in the third or the fourth draft. Until then, I am only trying to please myself. And even in the fourth draft or further passes, I'm honestly still not thinking about readers. I'm just thinking about how to make it better on a craft level. But if it pleases you, it will please other people. So it is absolutely okay if you're writing this for you. In fact, I think if we think about readers too much, we get precious and we get really tight and anxious about it. So yeah, keep writing it for you. Number three, on a good note, all sorts of new ideas are bubbling up for me as I go through this process. And it is fun, all caps, despite the challenges. Thanks for all you do. Oh, that's not even a question. That's just a comment. It is fun. All of the new ideas are bubbling up as you go through this. And it is fun. I love hearing that. Isn't it fun? Isn't it just the most fun sometimes? And it's basically free. So much of this. I just saw a Reddit post, which was like, what are some things that you can do that are enjoyable that don't cost a lot of money? Writing has to be one of the most enjoyable experiences with the lowest overhead. Like, we can spend money on a whiz-bang computer and some software and then some nice pens and a notebook and we're out, we're done. Sure, if we're self-publishing, we can spend a lot of money on publishing costs, or we can spend the minimum. But for actually doing it, we get to do this. We get to sit down and write things that come out of our heads and our fingers. How cool is that? So thank you, Linda. I'm so happy that you're having fun. Thank you, everyone, for listening. How are you getting your writing done? Let me ask you the name of the show. How do you write? How do you write? If you are not writing right now, if you're frustrated because you haven't been writing as much as you would want or at all that means is that the process you think will work for you does not work. That is not your process. So we have ripped off that Band-Aid. And now that allows you to think, well, what is a new process I could try? What is a new process I haven't tried in a while and I would like to go back to? I used to say that I couldn't write before work because it would leave me depleted for the rest of the day. However, I don't write after work. So we've proven that that's not our process. Maybe I'll try writing before work again, even if it is just for 10 minutes. Even if we get up 10 minutes early to grab 10 minutes of writing before we go to work, that's a whole hour if you write 6 days that week. I know I'm doing some really advanced math right here. I know. So how do you write? Where is it getting done? If it's not getting done, what you think is your process is not your process and you need a new process. And that's why you listen to the show or hearing all about the processes. And I'm really glad that you are here. And thank you. Thank you to all who listen and all who support. And if y'all want to check out the micro coaching level, it's over at patreon.com/Rachel. Thank you for being here, everybody. And happy writing to you. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of How Do You Write? You can reach me on Twitter, Rachel Herron, or at my website, rachelherron.com. You can also support me on Patreon and get essays on living your creative life for as little as a buck an essay at patreon.com/Rachel, spelled R-A-C-H-A-E-L. And do sign up for my free weekly newsletter of encouragement to writers at rachelherron.com/write. Now go to your desk and create your own process. Get to writing, my friends.